Sorry, some are long button pushes, some are short button pushes, and it's not intuitive. All right, so I'm going to be recording this. I maybe should have started a little bit earlier. I won't put this online. If you got a question, make sure you ask. If you don't want me to record, just let me know. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, how do you get into this class? That's really good information to know. And the way you get into class is by finding a spot in lab. Because you see we have a lot of seats in here, but I only have 24 seats in lab. And there are already 25 people signed up for lab. Not everybody's going to show up. And so right at the very beginning of lab, I'll take attendance. If there's a no-show, guess what? You're cut loose, right? 1 minute, 2 minutes right after the class starts, no-shows get cut loose, and I replace students right there and then. During lab, I'll give you an ad code and a bunch of other information that I emailed out to everybody. So go to the labs. I think my next lab is at 12:55 today. I also have one at 8 o'clock on Wednesday, 12:55 on Wednesday as well. So lab is what's rate limiting, not lecture, because we have to have seats and lab materials and stuff like that. Yeah?
So if you're looking for one of lab classes, can you go to both of them?
Absolutely. Try to get into any class you want. But I will add students from the add list first. So you still have some chances, but it's best, your best chance is to go to the lab where you are waitlisted.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as far as all the stuff that's due in assignments, you can't get into Blackboard?
Do I delay them? No. I can't.
I'll
try to make sure. It's over a week away.
Okay.
Okay, so you'll have plenty of time.
Okay.
Except for the extra credit assignment today. You'll have to cram a little bit for that. But it's just not possible for me to go back and reprogram any of these classes because it's just not one class. I got to do it many, many times in a row. I think there was a question way in the back. Yeah, you're going to have to, like, shout. Yeah, you know what? I can only see your lips moving, but I can't hear a thing. Lab, third floor, 335. It's next to the greenhouse. It's really close to the greenhouse. So if you go up to the third floor, you can take the elevator. For sure, you get there. Not all the stairs go up to the third floor, but most do. All right. In lab, I go over some of the required materials. This is required material. This is a Scantron. This is the one we need, right? And you're going to have to perfect your skills for filling out a Scantron. Probably they are already, but your board exams are going to be on these things too. So if you make a smudge, you'll get the answer wrong. Right. You'll get to go over it with me, and I'll get to show you which one you got wrong because it got smudged. The first test, I'll give you credit for it, if it sort of looks like you bubbled in the right one. Second test, third test, it's smudged, you won't get credit for it. If you smudge up a Scantron for a board exam, will you get credit for it? No. You'll have to pay $600 to take the board exam over again. Right? So that's why I have you get a good eraser and a pencil. Take your pencil before you come to the exam. Make a mark on a nice clean piece of paper. Make sure you can erase it with your eraser. And I give you examples in the syllabus. Right? So please don't smudge up your Scantron. Also, it has to be nice and flat, not spindled and mutilated. I wouldn't even use this one because it's spindled already. Okay? It's got to be nice and flat. This might not go through the machine. It might get hung up and get all ripped up, and then I don't know what to do. Right? But this right here is what? An 882E. I like E because all of these spaces right here are just white. They don't have any ink in them. They're not grayed out or greened out or whatever color that is. That works best with a Scantron reader. You can get a low VOS form where these things are shaded in and it may work, but I can't guarantee it. All right, so this one I can guarantee will mostly work. Okay. That's probably good for now. Yes, question. You can go to any lab. Try to get into any lab. Either with me as an instructor or Dr. Sanchez. Who else? Palmisano is teaching. Probably a couple other people. You have to look at the schedule of classes. I just haven't memorized it. I have a lab today at 12:55. I'm sure there's an evening class. Maybe a late afternoon class as well. There might be three classes left today. Okay, for sure two. My lab and another lab in the evening. Okay, yeah.
I tried to click on the lab protocol, and they show the pictures, they show very small. And when they try to open it back, and the picture is not very clear.
You mean like right here, lab practicum?
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't done a dry run, so let's just pick one and see what happens. Okay, so what am I going to do? I'm going to do pectoral girdle, right click, save target as. And let's put it on the desktop, just so we can confuse other instructors. Okay. All right, so it's downloading, 1 second. Is it downloaded already? No, not yet. Oh yeah, here. Ah, because this symbol right here is the VLC player. All right, that's not resident on your computer probably. Otherwise, it would be a Windows Media Player icon, something like that. So let's go to the desktop. Desktop, and where do I see it? Ah, right here, pectoral girdle. Will it stay there? It won't stay there. Oh, where did it go? Over here. All right, now I'm going to right-click again on that icon. I may or may not like the VLC player, but that's okay because we can tell it how I want to open. Let's try open with Windows Media Player. I don't know if you tried that yet. Let's just see. I got my fingers crossed. Looks like Windows Media Player. That's nice. Codec required. Ooh, it had a problem.
Okay, good morning class. Ah. 531 Anatomy class.
It should look like that.
All right, so
it should sound like that.
And I would like to know the name of that phone. What is that phone?
Okay, so I go over a lot of stuff you got to know for lab. And I hired an actor that sounds like my voice. Okay. So Windows Media Player seems to work fine. Maybe we could talk after class or something. All right, so just like that. And then this thing, I'm just going to get rid of because it's big. Okay. Nice. Oh, DVIX. I didn't see that open up. That's a nice one. So also at Blackboard, you have lecture slides that I like to work off of. I don't have PowerPoint slides for this class. And I do give you the text slides of what I like to present in class, which means you don't have to take notes, right? If you're an audio learner, maybe you just want to listen to somebody talk. Maybe you learn really well with that. If you're a visual learner, then you need to look at pictures. Or maybe you actually need to make diagrams as we talk about stuff or write stuff down. But I think everybody would be served by bringing these lecture outlines or notes out, like here's what, chapter one. It's a Word file. So you can modify it if you bring a laptop in. And probably it would be good for you to rewrite your notes after class, right? Because you're just using more and different parts of your brain when you rewrite your notes. Some people might find that mandatory for you to learn stuff. It might help some people a lot. It might help some people just a little bit. All depends on your learning style. Okay, but I would not rely on these things just 100%. I probably would rewrite them out or organize them somehow. And if you write them out, then you're using more parts of your brain. That's important. More global use of your brain is important for learning new things. And that's why maybe you should corner one of your family members and talk to them about anatomy. Describe body cavities to them, right? And use your verbal language, and that will help you remember things in your mind. Right, or a classmate, or me, for instance. But it's probably a good idea to talk about anatomy with somebody. Your grandma. Your grandma might be really interested. Talk about knees or hips or something like that, right? Okay. Because damage a hip, that could be life-threatening. All right, so let's get started. Here's the first lab slide, but I also want to do what? I want to find some of the text pictures. All right, and we like 6, chapter 1, okay, so I'll show these pictures on one slide and the word slides on the other, so there's really no optimal place to sit except maybe right smack in the middle, so they probably have to look one way or the other, but I like to show both at the same time. All right, I don't have a picture slide for this first concept. Right, anatomy and physiology. Two important disciplines are highly related to each other. You can't really know one without the other, but one has more basic information. One is really a foundation for knowing something about the other. Right, and so let's start with this one. Anatomy is the scientific study of structure. It's the structure of something. How many fingers do you have on your right hand?
Five.
You got five. Okay. And how many on your left hand? You got five. And look at me. I'm really proud of that because I grew up in a machine factory. Right? So I got five on both hands. That's really nice. That structure, okay, you can use this structure for something. Okay, which means I can actually grab something because this is a fancy thumb right here. If you don't have that fancy thumb, if they change the structure of this hand, what can you tell me about the function of this hand? It changes as well, right? So physiology is the study of function, how your heart functions, how your brain functions, how your musculoskeletal system functions. And really the only way to understand that is by understanding the structure first. So the structure is fundamental to knowing physiology. That's why this class is a prerequisite to a physiology class. And we're going to look at that in terms of the microscope when we get it up into lab. But for instance, if you don't know anything about an automobile or a car, and I give you some instructions, and I say, hey, this car is really handy. It's really easy to use. Right? I hand you some instructions, and I say, okay, put the key in the ignition, but hold the steering wheel. But if you don't know what a steering wheel is, what's the worth of those instructions? They're not very helpful, right? So no structure before anatomy. And if you change the structure of something, guess what you're also changing hand in hand? The function of something, right? Change the structure, change the function. If you observe there's a change in function of something, guess what you can guess and be right almost all the time? If there's a change in function, there's also a change in structure. Okay, it goes backwards. But the structure doesn't determine, I mean, the function doesn't determine the structure. It goes the other way around. The structure determines the function of something. So we're going to be really interested in the structures of things here. And the study of structure is anatomy. The study of function is physiology. Some classes here contain both in the same class. And that's a really nice way of doing it, too. Some branches of anatomy. Here are different kinds of anatomy. Gross anatomy is anatomy of a person's body that you can see with your naked eye. That doesn't mean that it's gross. It just means that it's what? Big. Okay, big. Anatomy you can see with your naked eye. You don't need special instruments like your heart, limbs. That's gross anatomy. Microscopic anatomy you can't see with your naked eye because it's too small, right? So what kind of instrument do you need? Microscope. Yeah, so that's what we're going to look at in the first lab and use it extensively in the second lab. Developmental anatomy, let's see if I can remember. Developmental anatomy is, okay, the structure of your body is not the same from when you're conceived, a single cell, until the day you die. It's going to be changing all the time. And developmental anatomy is the study of how a person's body changes before you're born. Right, how does it change? And as it changes, the function of that body changes as well. We're not going to spend a lot of time with developmental anatomy. Okay, embryology, again, that's a study of structure before you're born. Surface anatomy is kind of handy. You'll learn some things, but we don't spend a lot of time on it. There are certain things on your body that are prominent, easy to see, easy to palpate with your fingertips. Right, like I can feel this bony thing right here in my shoulder going all the way across. You're probably familiar with that without even looking at it inside your body or my body. Does anybody know what that thing is? Can you palpate it with your fingertips right there? What's that? That's your clavicle, sometimes called collarbone. Right. So surface anatomy is just studying the surface of your body to then automatically know what's underneath it. Like where's your liver, where are your kidneys, where's your heart, things like that. We spend a little bit of time. It will just kind of come automatically. Yeah. Gross anatomy. Okay, gross anatomy could include understanding the chambers inside the heart. The heart is way deep inside your body, but you're going to know there's four chambers and the valves, right, and blood vessels that attach to it. That's gross anatomy, but it's not on your surface. All right. So in order to know something on your surface, you have to look for a landmark that's on your surface to understand what might be deeper. Okay? Like what might be a pretty good example. Well, you might want to take somebody's pulse and you'll want to find a blood vessel. And one way to do that is look for somebody's thumb, that surface anatomy, and put your fingers right at the base of the thumb. And there's going to be a blood vessel right there that you can count somebody's heartbeat. All right, so that's nice surface anatomy. Okay, or other landmarks, maybe on somebody's foot for a pedal pulse, things like that. And actually much more complicated. Okay, levels of structural and functional organization. All right, so when you have a big problem or you have a big topic with a lot of sub-disciplines to it, one way to study something that's very complicated, maybe like your finances, probably you don't understand your financial situation until you can break it down into components, break it down into smaller pieces. Understand a small piece, right, and then look at each of the pieces, add the pieces back up together, and then you have a pretty good understanding of what's happening there. But looking at the whole big picture is really tough. Same thing for the body. You look at somebody's whole person, hard to know what's going on. So we're going to break your body down into pieces, understand what each of the pieces are, add them back up together, and then sooner or later you'll have a much better understanding of how your whole body is put together. Right? But we're not going to start with gross anatomy. We're going to start with something even really small, something that you can't even see with a microscope, like chemicals. And these are the fundamentals of structure. These chemicals, we put these chemicals together, they make a structure. Some of these chemicals are various ions, like calcium. You've probably heard of calcium. Why do you need calcium? You want these ions right here because, yeah, you make nice strong bones out of calcium. And lots of other things. Probably the least place where you want calcium is in your bones, but it's a good idea that you have some there. Sodium and potassium. You don't have to know a lot of chemical nomenclature, but we're going to start talking about some other small things, right? Like H2O, what's that? Water, you all know that. That's a chemical formula for water. Cholesterol is important. Collagen, that's a really important molecule we're going to talk about a lot because that holds your body together. And then, probably my favorite chemical in my body is adenosine triphosphate. Sometimes we just call that ATP. That is an energy molecule. Without that molecule being in your cells can't stay alive. They'll die. Okay. And there's some organelles then that make some parts of the cell that make ATP for you so that those cells can stay alive and that they can do things. Right? They can respond. Muscles can contract. Neurons can send electrical impulses. Endocrine glands can secrete hormones into your body. Okay, that all requires ATP. So if we put a bunch of these chemicals together, then we can make something called an organelle. Organelle is just a little tiny organ that is inside of a cell. Right? So we can look at the picture slide over here. Here we have molecules. This even starts at a smaller level, atoms. We don't really talk about atoms. We mentioned some molecules, but if you take atoms, put them together, you get a molecule. Put a whole bunch of molecules together, you can get an organelle. And this one you're going to be familiar with. This is called a mitochondria. So it kind of looks like a bean, and you see some structure on the inside of it. This is the guy, actually it could be a gal too, doesn't matter, that makes something. Anybody know what this thing makes? It makes ATP, makes that energy molecule. So it's hugely important inside these cells. Right? And then if we take a whole bunch of organelles together, including the cell membrane, right, then we get a cell that we have right here. And this in particular is a cell that can contract, so it is a muscle cell. And it's got mitochondria because it needs ATP to contract. It's got a nucleus so that it has genetic material, so that it can control its function and structure as well. And if we put a whole bunch of these cells together, then we get the next level of organization. Okay? And we're going to put only these cells that look like this shape and have this function together. And when we do, we get a tissue. So a tissue is a bunch of cells that have all the same shape, same size, same function. Okay? And they're all performing basically one function because they all have the same shape. So that is an organelle. If we put a couple different kinds of tissues together, right, then we get an organ. For instance, here's a blood vessel. It's got muscle, and it's got connective tissue, and it's got some epithelium. It has various kinds of tissues, right? And so this is an organ. Your heart is an organ because it has a lot of different kinds of tissues in it. Right, so you need a whole bunch of tissues to make an organ. And your body doesn't have one organ, it has many. If we take all those organs and put them together, right, then we get what? The organ system level. Right? And that's really important. We'll see how a heart interacts maybe with your respiratory system, how blood vessels interact with skeletal muscles. right? So that would be organ system. And if we put all these organ systems together, like cardiovascular system, musculoskeletal system, everything together, then we get back to the whole person. We call that the organismal level. Right, so this is just a hierarchical organization. So if you want to make a tissue, what's the building block that you need? If you want to make a tissue, you need cells, right? If you want to make an organ, what do you need? Tissues, right? So I want you to be able to go up and down this level of organization, know what the building blocks are. So that concept of building block is real important, right? Know what the building block of organ system. And that's pretty obvious. That is organ. Okay. What's the building block of an organelle? That is a something smaller. That's a molecule. Okay. So be able to go back and forth right here. Different textbooks have different levels of organization, but they're all pretty much the same as this. One thing that I do want to... Oh, let's just go over some of these. A nucleus is an organelle. Rough endoplasmic reticulum, I'm going to mention this some, is an organelle. Golgi body is an organelle. We're going to learn what they look like and to some degree know what their function is. All right, so if we put all these organelles together, we get a cell, and that cell is really important. Right? It's a basic living unit of all life. So if something is alive, guess what it has to be made out of? Or guess what it has to be? It's got to be made out of cells. So if you're interested to find out if something is alive or not, you've got to look at it and analyze it. And if you can find cells, then there's a good possibility it's alive. If you see something, even though it has function, maybe changing shape or whatever, if it's not a cell, it can't be alive. I'm going to go over some characteristics of a cell. It's kind of fun to talk about it right now. A cell has a cell membrane that surrounds the cell, separates the outside non-living world with the living world on the inside. That's one thing it has to have. The second thing it has to have is genetic material. It's got to be able to reproduce itself into subsequent generations. That's important. And it has to have cytoplasm. It has to have things that allow those living processes to take place. And cytoplasm could be organelles like mitochondria. It's got to have all three of these things, right? And if it's alive, guess what you can do with it? You can kill it. I think I heard somebody say kill it. That's right. If it's alive, you can kill it. If it's not alive, can you kill it? No, that doesn't make sense, right? Okay, let's consider a virus, for instance. A virus can cause infection. Some of you might have a flu cold right now. And a virus has a protein coat. It's like a crystal. And it has genetic material, and that's it. Is it a cell? It doesn't have all three criteria, right? So it's not a cell. And if it's not a cell, is a virus alive? That's right. It is not alive. So that's interesting, because if it's not alive, can you kill it? You cannot kill a virus because it's not alive. And that's why viral infections are typically very dangerous. Your body has to develop an immune response in order to fight that infection, right? There are very few drugs that are antiviral agents. Right, there are a lot of good antibiotics because bacteria are alive. It has all the criteria, but viruses do not. All right, so that's just a fun little sidetrack. Organ systems. You've got some really good pictures of organ systems in your body. Okay, and I might ask you, I might give you a couple organs, and you should be able to place it in these organ systems right here. One, well, it's not really hard to know. I'll give you a skeletal muscle or heart and ask you what organ system it belongs to, and you're going to say muscle, right? That's really easy to know. And if I say neurons, what organ system does that belong to? Nervous system, right? That's really trivial. But there is one that's not so trivial, and that is integumentary system. And that's what I see on this first slide right over here. So if you know what the integument is, then you've taken some kind of anatomy. You're educated in anatomy a little bit, right? So that's probably something I would test on, right? Some word that is just not really obvious what it means, but something that you should know. Integument is your skin. It's a covering of your body, as well as some accessory structures like hair, right? And nails, that's just an extension of the skin. And when we get to the integumentary system, you see that there's a little bit of muscle in there as well. There's some nervous tissue in there as well for sensation. There's some other glandular tissue for oil and for regulating body temperature, sweat glands. Okay, so integumentary system is the covering on our body. All right. Skeletal system, easy. Everything in your bones. What's your favorite bone? Anybody have a favorite bone?
Scapula.
Scapula, pretty good. Oh, you know, I kind of like that one too, especially for back rubs. That's great. Okay. Muscles, muscular system. Anybody have a favorite muscle? Heart's pretty good. Okay. We're talking about skeletal muscle here. Okay. And this skeletal muscle is a little bit different than heart muscle or cardiac muscle. The structure is different, so the function is a little bit different. These things right here we call skeletal muscle, okay, because it attaches to the skeleton. It attaches to your bones. And when these muscles contract, it moves your bones around. That's the important thing about skeletal muscle. And of course, you know, you have control of where your bones are going. Skeletal muscle is under voluntary control, which makes it a little bit different than heart muscle. You can't tell your heart to stop. You can't tell it to relax. You can tell your biceps to relax, like that. Yeah, like for instance, what do we got here? Pectoralis major. I don't see a biceps, but I see a triceps right here. So all of those muscles that you have voluntary control over, and basically they just move your bones around or your skeleton, we call that skeletal muscle. That's one class of muscle. Skeletal system. Some people combine muscle system with skeletal system, and that would be the musculoskeletal system. So it all depends on how you can want to classify things. Nervous system. Okay, we got nerves in the periphery. We got brain. We got spinal cord. These are some components of the nervous system, and then some other kinds of cells. Ooh, endocrine system. Sort of like the nervous system. Nervous system controls, coordinates different parts of your body, but so does the endocrine system by secreting hormones. All right, ovary, important endocrine gland. Pancreas, important endocrine gland. It secretes a hormone that you all have heard about and know about. Anybody take a guess at what hormone it secretes that's really important, produces a lot of disease if it's not working properly? It secretes a hormone that regulates blood glucose concentration. And if it isn't regulated, what's the pathology called? Diabetes mellitus, right? So the pancreas is responsible for secreting insulin and some other hormones too. Physiology is a good class to learn about all these. Adrenal gland, thyroid gland, there's even some glands in your brain that secrete hormones, like the pineal gland, pituitary gland, testes. Ooh, I forgot about testes. Okay, cardiovascular system, heart, blood vessels. You see veins and arteries here as well, different colors. We're going to learn what a good definition is for artery and a vein, and it's not by their color. What do we got here? Lymphatic system is an auxiliary circulatory system that returns fluid back to your heart that's trapped in tissue spaces. Lymphatic system? Yeah. Question?
Is it that lymphatic is that what an immune system?
Okay. Ask me one more time.
Is it the same with the immune system? The function is the same?
Okay, I don't understand the last system you're talking about. Oh, immune system, immune. Absolutely. We're going to talk about the immune system. There are certain parts of the lymphatic system that are super special and designed specifically to fight infection. For instance, like lymph nodes right here. And we have things that look like lymph nodes everywhere in our body that don't return fluid back to the heart, but they fight infection. Yeah, so fight infection is just as important as returning fluid back to the heart. Yeah, immune system, very good, excellent, like these lymph nodes right here. Okay, since these lymph nodes here fight infection and return fluid back to the heart, if these things are removed, maybe somebody has some cancer in an extremity and these lymph nodes have to be removed because it contains cancerous cells, what might be some of the effects of removing this lymphatic tissue from this leg right here? What did we say the function was? Return fluid and fight infection. So it's going to, this part of your body might have a little bit of trouble fighting infection, but also fluid is going to be trapped in that part of the body. It's going to swell up. We call that edema. That's just a side effect of that surgery. Well, if you had a choice of having no cancer and a swollen leg, or cancer and a normal leg for a little period of time, what would you choose? A swollen leg, of course, right? That's just the way it goes. Okay. Respiratory system. These wind passageways right here, like trachea, and then lungs, of course. And I think that's maybe all I want to talk about. Urinary system. Okay. Can anybody give me an organ in a urinary system? Kidney. That's right. Kidney. Urinary bladder. All right. So be familiar with some of these systems right here and organelles. I got to look and see what time this class is over. It's a weird time. And guess what? We can't use that clock right there. 12:05. All right. We got a couple minutes left. The slide over here, we see some planes that are moving through this person, right? And they're very thin planes, and you can see that the angle between any of these planes is 90 degrees, right? And that's important because we live in a spatial dimension that has three dimensions to it. There's right, left, up and down, forward and backwards. There's no other way you can go. And so these imaging planes are lined up to correspond to those three different directions or three different planes. If we want to separate somebody's body, maybe take an image and separate the right side of their body from the left side, what kind of plane, imaging plane, would we want to use? Okay, we see sagittal. Sometimes, okay, we have another name. If it's right smack in the middle, because you got five fingers on this side and a nostril, five fingers on this side and a nostril, right, there's some really nice symmetry. Sometimes we call that mid-sagittal. Only a sagittal section, if you're right smack in the middle, are the sides mostly the same. Right, so mid-sagittal or median plane. But you could have a sagittal plane way over here, separating your right arm from the rest of your body. Or you could have it over here or someplace in between. That's still sagittal, but not mid-sagittal if it's off the midline. Transverse, where I have the cursor, that separates the top part of somebody's body from the bottom part. Like to look at a section right through somebody's diaphragm or stomach. That would be a transverse section. Now's a good time to talk about this. All right, so you know what right and left is. Right and left is good anatomic language. If you talk, I said top and bottom. If you tell that to an anatomist, they'll just cringe. And probably I did when I said that because it has terminology on its own. All right. If something is above or on top of something, we say it is superior. If it is below, we say it's inferior. So the best way for me to ask you that question is, what can separate your body from a superior part from an inferior part? That would be a transverse plane. Then the last one is, if you separate an anterior, which is front, anterior is anatomic language, from the back part. Anybody know the anatomic language for back? Posterior, and it even has another name to make it interesting. It's called dorsal as well. Posterior and dorsal in humans are exactly the same thing. But anything that will separate an anterior from a posterior part is a frontal plane, like so. Right, so you got to be familiar with these planes. We go over some of these maybe in lab if we have time. All right, so I didn't pass around a sign-in sheet today. Usually I will, and that's your contract that you were in class. If you sign that, then I know you're in class. If you forget to sign it, then that's absent. I just want to do a quick quiz with you guys. So what are those three planes once again? Transverse, sagittal, and frontal. Yeah, frontal sometimes we can call coronal as well. So I'm going to place my hand. Here's my hand. And I'm going to make it be a plane, and you tell me what kind of plane it is. You ready? That's some language for see you on Wednesday. Yeah. I didn't take attendance today. I just had too much to think of.